Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO at Vena. Before we begin today's show, I'd like to take a moment to invite you to join me at Accelerate Finance 2025. This year's event takes place in Las Vegas from May 12th to 15th and features a dedicated track for CFOs and aspiring executives, plus keynotes and panels with finance leaders who are redefining what's possible in FP&A. Visit acceleratesummit.com to get your ticket and learn more. Are we on the brink of a new AI-driven industrial revolution that will transform how companies operate, innovate, and compete? The rapid advancements in artificial intelligence are poised to transform industries, create new economic opportunities, and challenge our traditional notions of work and productivity. From automating routine tasks to revolutionizing decision-making processes, AI is set up to become a driving force in the global economy. As businesses scramble to harness the power of AI, questions arise about the distribution of productivity gains, the future of employment, and the implications of this technological leap. Joining me to explore the profound impact AI will have on businesses and the economy in this exciting new era is Hugh Cumming, the Chief Technology Officer of Vena Solutions. Hugh has over 20 years of experience as a product and technology leader. At Vena, he is responsible for powering scale and industry-leading growth, leveraging his extensive experience in the financial technology sector. Hugh, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Melissa.
Many are calling AI the next big revolution. Would you agree with that assessment?
You know, I think you have to look at it in context of other big changes that have happened over many years that arrive. Certainly with technology, there was the advent of mobile devices, which profoundly changed the way people live and work. But if you go back even further to when digitization or computing first arrived, it literally changed the way all companies operated. You went from accounting, which is of course near and dear to our core, rooms filled with people filling in ledgers by hand, to suddenly overnight, with the advent of large-scale computers, being able to be done not just 20% faster, but thousands of times faster. So you have to think of AI as that profound a change over time to the way we work that would have happened at the dawn of, you know, the digital era, which was a long time ago. But before that, even manufacturing. And then before that, you know, my favorite analogy is the analogy of the steam locomotive. It wasn't just better able to move goods than two stagecoaches. It really could replace thousands of stagecoaches. And, you know, I think we're just at the beginning of what's possible with AI, but I do think we need to look at it as having that potential to transform how we live and work.
That would be a resounding yes.
That would be a resounding yes.
Now, one of the things I think right now everyone talks about is this is going to make us way more efficient. Similar to prior industrial revolutions, there's this orders of magnitude of change that happens and a huge amount of efficiency. What are some of the ways that you're seeing where that efficiency is starting to come to bear?
Well, my favorite example right now at our company is our legal team. And they've jumped right into using a variety of tools, AI tools, to help, you know, build contract language. And of course, still maintaining the responsibility to ensure that it's correct. But the amount of work that it can generate that would have taken, you know, a room full of interns, is it's possible now for a legal team that's small to do the work of many more. And it's simply with the power of AI. So that, for me, is a great example of what's possible.
Well, and along those same lines, our purchasing team is also using it for similar application, because you think about contracts, you've got a vendor contract, you're trying to understand, okay, do these meet my standard terms? What's different? What's unique? What do I need to know? And it's helping to supercharge that ability for the purchasing team to focus on the things that you still need the human to do. The negotiation, or what are the tactics that you're going to go about this, connecting your dots internally, but eliminating some of that tactical work that previously they would have spent just trying to glean, okay, what's in this document? Does it match what I'm looking for? What do I need to surface out? So you're right. It makes such a huge step change function for these teams, pretty quickly out of the gate.
And I think we're just now starting to explore what it means. And I think trust is building, but humans are still have one hand on the steering wheel, so to speak. And I think they will for a very long time until we really understand kind of where it's best applied. But also at the same time, this process of experimentation that I think everyone's going through will ultimately result in productivity gains across all aspects of not just our work life, but I think also at home as well.
And a couple of areas where people are starting to see some of those benefits, both at work and at home, is drafting communications. I think lots of people are quickly seeing that benefit. And like you said, then the human still comes along and maybe adds to it or says, okay, this is the tone, or yes, I like that, I don't like that. But it's really helping get you to a good starting point on a draft communication. Another area is starting to prioritize some of your work or looking through what sometimes feels like data or emails that we're drowning in. And now we can start to see the ability to suss out of that what are the priorities and start to put those at the top.
One of my favorite things to do with Copilot is to ask Copilot if I missed any important emails. And, you know, without any other knowledge, it will come back with a list of things I might want to consider replying to. And, you know, out of the thousands of emails that clutter up our email boxes, that's just a great example of something that AI can do for you to help you be more productive. I think that we often underestimate as humans the cost of switching contexts. And the example you gave around helping co-create emails is such a great example, because there's this context switching cost when you're replying to one subject versus another subject, especially in roles like yours or mine, where you're having to deal with a lot of different subject matters. There is a real cost of saying, now I have to reply to this customer. Now I have to deal with this engineering issue. Now I have to deal with this product issue. And they're all very different. And there's a time cost. And what you can do with AI is help overcome that time cost. Like, give me a starting point. This is what I need to get done next. And it'll help get that starting point.
Well, I hope that Copilot is surfacing my emails to you as one of the priority ones to you. So.
I'll make sure I ask next time.
Better train it. What about to-do lists? Are you using AI for your to-do lists?
I have used it for the to-do list. I think, you know, one of the home tasks that are most complicated is to keep up with all the stuff that you need to keep the house running. Two kids and school and supplies and food and groceries. Like, there's just a mountain of things, summer camps and all the things you have to remember that AI can help with. And you have to just try it. And I always say this to people, you just have to ask it to do something. And I think people, that helps overcome the concern and then see what it comes back with. And it's wrong. The coolest thing, if it's wrong, you can just tell it, you're wrong. This is what I wanted, something more like this. And I think that's where the wow comes from.
So what's the best application that you found for it in your personal life?
In my personal life, I think is looking at travel planning. Of course, like we all start our travel searches, you know, maybe on a Google search, but now with AI, you can do more. You can actually be much less structured about where you want to go. You can be much less structured about what you're thinking about, the types of destinations you're thinking about. And it can propose a trip and a trip itinerary specific to a destination and actually give you something that's quite unique that you may have had to use a travel agency or booked a tour in the past. So it could actually build you a custom tour, book hotels in every one of those cities, flights between them. So if you're really looking to be adventurous in your travel, you know, try using AI to actually help plan and book your next trip.
Well, I can't wait to hear about your AI adventures and what kind of trips it's taking you on.
None like so far, but it's been fun, like, experimenting with it.
We talk a lot about AI and how it's helping improve efficiency. What about creativity? I think that's one of the areas we don't talk about as much, you know, that creativity or problem solving, which can be somewhat linked to efficiency, but also there's some real benefits just on its own right when it comes to those things.
I think problem identification is something that it can be very good at. If given a data set, finding, you know, anomalies or helping us pinpoint our efforts and activities on where we can solve problems. I think that's a great example of where it can help build efficiency. And then it gets back to that, the amount of pre-work that has to happen before you can come up with those creative moments. And the other thing is, creativity can't be pushed, right? It's like, it's kind of like a soap bubble, right? So if you imagine holding one of those little, you know, things you blow into, right? You blow too hard, it bursts. You know, you just have to get it right. And if you've seen like those people with those big ones and they practice forever, they can create these massive soap bubbles. And, you know, creativity is kind of like that. You can't push it. You have to make sure all the ingredients are there for it to happen. And, you know, AI can help get you into that spot where you don't have too many drains on your creative cycle so that you can focus on being creative by helping with problem identification, by establishing, you know, a set of targets. And then I think then we can do our best work, because there's so much of what we do every day that isn't our best work. It's just work. And I think part of what we're trying to explore with AI is how do we get rid of the just work and focus on our best work every day. And that's, I think the productivity comes from not just eliminating the just work, but also the power of what if instead of 30% of your day was your best work, if 70% of your day was your best work, that's where the multiplier comes from, because that's twice as much best work in a day, not just 20% more, right?
That starts to touch on something that we're starting to hear a lot more about, which is how are roles in the future going to change? Not just finance roles, but even more broadly, when we think across different industries like healthcare, et cetera, what do you see is going to be coming there?
Well, I think, you know, just following that same thread, the idea that, you know, AI will help unlock human potential is very real. Because if you think about your day and you think about 70% of it being just work today, eliminating half of that so that now 70% or more is your best work and it's where you are most productive, you know, we can imagine that all roles will transform in that way, that some material portion of the stuff that we have to do every day, whatever it is, will be replaced by AI. And I think, you know, whether that is a role where you're today having to respond to customer inquiries, maybe 70% of them you don't have to respond to, because today machines have been able to respond to those, but generally with a lot of guardrails. And AI just loosens those guardrails to the point where they actually start replacing work that would have normally been done by humans. And I think that exponential increase of productivity really is about empowering the people who are impacted to do more of their best work.
It's interesting because when you talk about doing more of our best work, that's more exciting work. That's actually going to be a more fulfilling job when we can realize it. And so instead of it being something that we should be fearing, it actually is something we should be embracing.
Right.
You know, one of the things I read recently was to think about AI as your workforce partner, not your replacement.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's interesting, because they're along with you for the ride to help you, not there to be something that you should just be worried about is going to actually replace you. But you got to embrace it to make that so. Otherwise, the partnership doesn't work.
And I think, you know, that overcoming that fear of an uncertainty, it can only happen by trying it. I mean, I think that's the only thing I could encourage people to just try it, right? Just like look at your day and all the things that get in the way of you doing your best work, and just ask Copilot or Claude or any one of the AI that people are using to just help you take care of that task and just see what happens. And I think you'll be amazed at how that can unlock time in the day. And suddenly you have an hour back, because instead of responding to 29 of 30 emails, you responded to 4 of 30, and the other ones were, you know, dealt with in an intelligent manner. And, you know, I think, you know, as we continue to explore what is possible, you start, you know, you get this measurable benefit to the organizations that you're working within, as every employee at the person level starts leveraging. It's not just a, you know, the big company program, we're going to do AI. It's really, you know, how do we impact the lives of everyone in the company by removing that toil, that daily toil, so that they can do their best work.
When you got into the exploratory motion, what did that look like? Is it something that you made a conscious effort to try every day, every week, a certain amount of time? How did you get the ball rolling?
I mean, you know, I think I probably have the benefit of being in the technology space. So it's always been something that I've been passionate about. I like to try new things out. So I was, you know, obviously drawn to try it out to see how well it can work. So I think for me, it was easy to overcome that barrier. One of the first places that, you know, I really saw the power of it was actually in the software development lifecycle. I had lunch with my brother, and he had just started playing with a beta of GitHub Copilot, which is oriented towards software developers. And this was before ChatGPT was public. And he showed me like it completing a bunch of code for him. And he said, and he's a much better developer than I am. And it was amazing to see how powerful this could be at, you know, doing the work that is you have to do, right? Which is, you know, documenting lines of code and like finishing, you know, I know error handling and like just there's a whole bunch of things within building software that isn't the artful creative piece, is the work part. And seeing that being done by AI and then allowing you to really think about what this system is going to do for its users is unlocks that creative, those creative cycles. And I think that's, you know, you take that use case and then you apply it to other professions. One of the reasons I came to Venna is I've always had a ton of empathy for our FP&A people. Mm-hmm. And because they're often the most stressed out people in the company because there's so many demands on them. And I think that's the problem we're trying to solve. And I think within their day, they have enormous insights that they want to share with the business leaders all the time. But there's like, you have to build this spreadsheet and build this report and build this deck and board reporting and this. So there's a ton of stuff that gets in the way mm-hmm. of, you know, that creativity, which is like, I think we should do this. And I think those moments only happen when you get the noise out of the way and you lower the signal to noise ratio for everyone in the company. And I think that's the point we're at right now, is getting people comfortable with their, you know, understanding their own signal to noise ratio in the work they're doing, and then at least trying to see how AI can help.
Well, and you touched on something interesting there, because, you know, we hear often, we got to try it, start experimenting. And so you try to overcome that fear, but you also had talked to your brother, and that's someone that presumably you trust. And he was showing you something he was doing that also helped validate what you were thinking it could do. And I think that that's one of the things too, that we can't underestimate. It sounds simple, but as we try things and we share with others,
right,
it helps open our eyes and makes us a little less cautious. Certainly I've experienced that. You know, you gave examples of the legal team. When I get a call, hey, look at what we can do here, I want to show you that excitement, and you take a few minutes to see what somebody else is doing with it, it makes you want to go out and try it. And so I think that that's another way that, you know, we can't underestimate, whether it's your peer groups that you're participating in, talking to others in your space, seeing what they're doing, sharing those experiences, it can help to get you going, get the momentum.
You know, and I think this is part of how we as humans like overcome obstacles, is, you know, looking to people who are ahead of us on the journey that we trust. And, you know, and because we're really good at coming up with reasons not to change.
Yeah. Change is hard. You deal with lots of different customers that we have here at Venna. How would you suggest that businesses start to go about introducing and integrating AI in their business operations without being too disruptive?
Yeah, you know, we've talked to a lot of customers about where they are in their AI journey. And, you know, I think all of them are at a different point, because of course their CEOs are coming to them saying, you know, what are you doing with AI? And so I think everyone is at that point of experimentation. And what we always say is you have to take a small piece and use AI to try to answer a question that you would have been asked, right? So, and part of it is just getting that comfort and confidence, because of course, if there's one space that you can't have the wrong answer is coming from the finance. A finance team presentation to the board or to the regulators has to be correct. And we hear that all the time, that, you know, how do we make sure that there's accuracy? And some of what we've been spending time with our customers is building these life cycles to ensure accuracy, but also building life cycles that keep improving the quality of the models over time with the data that you expect to be looking at. And, you know, one of the ways in which we always encourage customers to try things is, like, take something you know the answer to that you're going to get asked by one of your business stakeholders and ask AI to give you the answer and, you know, surprise yourself to see whether or not it got the same answer that you did. Because that is part of this life cycle, this training life cycle. You think about it as an intern that you just hired who has a fresh degree, you know, from a great school, but has never actually dealt with a business stakeholder question yet. Mm-hmm. Would you turn them directly over to your business stakeholder, or would you help them, you know, get better at providing answers? And if you think about AI that same way, you know, it's like, oh, this is my intern. I have a responsibility to make sure they're giving the right answer. I want them to be looking at the right data. I'm going to help them through that journey. And once I've done that a couple of times, I know they're good enough to be able to start replying and responding, right? And I think that's kind of the way to think about the journey. It's not all or nothing. It's very stepwise, incremental. It's like, what's my sales forecast question? I want them to know where the data is for that. And then you train AI to be able to respond where the data is. And then it then gets better at locating information, understanding your unique environment, and then being able to respond to these questions.
Well, and you touched on something interesting there in terms of, you know, our margin for error is very small, especially in finance. We need to get the right answer. All through years and years and decades and decades, it's always been, so you have a human do the work, then you have review. Because humans make errors as well, and you need to make sure that you're going to catch those, and you've got systems that are going to, at the end, make sure you're still getting the right answer. And similarly, in this case, there still needs to be the reviews happening.
That's right.
The checking, are these answers right? And so, but it allows us to spend more of our time in support of that and making sure that those answers that are getting out are the right answers.
That's
and,
right.
And that does take work and collaboration between us and the AI.
And that's, I think, why, you know, we've started using this example of the intern, right? Which is because you can't think of it as like, I'm just going to turn this on to everyone and then it's done. We all still hold that responsibility and making sure it's doing good work on our behalf. You have to think about it that way. It's going to get better. It's just going to get better. It's certainly getting faster. It's getting less expensive as things continue. And the data sets are getting more complete. But there's still this cycle of, you know, ensuring that the results are correct. That, you know, whether you had a real intern doing the work, you'd still have to correct it and potentially and make sure it's correct. And when the work comes from AI, I think that's very, very similar. But it still represents a material reduction in the amount of just work that you would have had to do.
Now, with this reduction in work and efficiency that comes along, the question then always becomes for businesses, what do I do now with this savings of time? You know, does that get reinvested back into the business? Do you end up having more profitability? Does it increase our work-life balance, our quality? There's like so many things that can come out of it.
Right.
What are your thoughts when it comes to that?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, I think how every company allocates those savings is going to be different. It's going to depend on the organization and what's most important. Take a step back. In, you know, every investment you want to make in any company, for it to survive, thrive, grow, should be a multiplicative investment. So spending more money to do just work makes less sense than using AI to take some work out and then investing that money for some gain. Whether that's opening a new store or it's, you know, hiring a revenue producing in the revenue producing parts of your business, or it's adding more capabilities to product, I think there's a really good case for shifting those efficiency gains from the cost side of the ledger to the growth side of the ledger.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think about you know, like you said, every business will find a different recipe for that. But at the end of the day, you need as a business to stay competitive, be aware what your competitors are doing. And the faster you can go, the more market share you can gain. It keeps you on the winning side the equation.
And that is a great point that sort of describes the world we live in. And I think that what I've heard people say is the companies that adopt AI and get really good at using it to run their business will be the companies that end up outcompeting their competitors, because they will be able to shift those efficiencies gained into more competitive offerings in, you know, maybe competing in more markets. How they shift those efficiencies, I think, comes down to, you know, how the business sees it succeeding. Every company, I think, in some respects, even if you're Apple or Microsoft or Amazon, capital is constrained in terms of all the ambitions you have, always in a company, right? It's always going to be, and, you know, and just like time is constrained for us, right? There's so many things all of us want to do, but time is a constraint. There's too many things to get done. You can't always do everything. Companies can't always chase all ambitions because capital is constrained. So AI unlocks both of those things in a very efficient manner. And I think that's why businesses that embrace AI and exploit its power early in this curve will eventually, I believe, outperform their peers.
And so if we think about how AI is starting to automate tasks, change the types of work we need to do, inevitably then we have to start thinking about what are the skill sets and competencies that the employees are going to need in this new world. How do you think about that?
I think I'll answer the question in two ways. One is just a recent story about a hackathon we ran that our co-op group, how they competed against our more experienced teams, right? The co-op team decided that they would write an add-in for Venna for Word, which we don't have today yet. So the co-op team took this opportunity to use ChatGPT or GitHub Copilot, actually, to scour the Microsoft documentation for all the information they would otherwise need and write in a coding language called Python that they hadn't yet used, a set of code. And then it worked. And then they presented this, you know, as part of, you know, and there was some software they had to write to stitch it all together. And then they presented this at our hackathon. And the amazing thing was how comfortable they were, you know, still in university, how comfortable they were already with using AI. And when we asked them about it, they said, well, we weren't going to read the 200-page document that Microsoft publishes on their Word APIs. We just asked Copilot to do it. We don't know how it did it, but because we never read the document. So, and I use that as an example because it's such a powerful statement on what it looks like when you're comfortable with it, right? Because, you know, if you think about that, they were just comfortable that, okay, I don't want to read this doc. I only have 2 days in the hackathon. I'm going to ask Copilot to build me the API interface by reading this document for me. And that outcome was, you know, we were all wowed, right? And, you know, eventually this will make our way into the product. There's obviously more steps that we have to take. But it's a great example of how important it is to overcome that fear and resistance to just being comfortable. So I think step one is, just, you know, everyone has to overcome that. And that in itself, I think, is a skill that people have to learn. It's just because that's what they did. That's all they did is, with their, you know, third year university mindset, unshackled by all of the burden of concern for change and how hard it's going to be. They just asked it to do something and it worked. And I think the second thing is, and maybe it's related, is finding that change resilience is so important at a time of rapid change. You know, the world has certainly not got less complex over time. And the ability to absorb change is, I think, a hallmark for both company and individual success. And companies that didn't change when the world was changing, digital cameras, for example, you know, these were moments of change, right? The iPhone, like these were moments of change. And there are companies, you know, some that we know very well as Canadians that didn't change fast enough. And those stories have all been written. And I think that's the same is true for people, is just recognizing when you're in the point of time in history that requires us to be a little bit bolder than we're comfortable and embrace some change.
Well, and change management skills don't just come naturally. It actually takes some concerted effort, recognizing that there's a change management aspect to what you're doing, and as businesses, leaning into helping our businesses in getting through that change. And we can be purposeful.
Yeah, I think, you know, change management is both art and science. It touches on really good management of stakeholder expectations, really good communication, and then empathy for, you know, natural human resistance to change that is built into our very DNA and how we've survived over the millennia is by being resistant to change, skeptical of it. And I think so overcoming those things, I think, is just, you know, what helps organizations succeed is just getting good at overcoming change, and also growing from the change and taking those opportunities to grow.
And then when I think about two more things that businesses can do to start to help their teams get the skill set, one is give them the time and space to experiment, because you need that. And there's going to be some failures within it or learnings, then that you have to be okay with that and make it so that employees feel comfortable.
Maybe not in your financial statement.
Not in the end result, no. That's why you have checks and balances and make sure you're getting the right answers. But the second is laying out explicitly the parameters of how your company is comfortable going about it so that people understand what is and isn't okay, so that they know when they're, you know, taking a risk that is within the confines of what is acceptable versus not.
I think that's a great
gotta lay that out.
Point. I think you have to signal your intent to the organization that you intend to be a leader in using AI to run the business, and helping people get comfortable that that's expected part of everyone's role. You know, I just finished a quarterly review with my operations team, and one of the things I asked for them at the next quarterly review is to provide a slide that just says how they're using AI in their day-to-day. And I think just little things like that trigger people to say, oh, yes, we are, but we didn't talk about it. So let's just talk about it a little bit more. And I think that just creates that healthy peer tension on the topic. You know, when you get a room full of people presenting a quarterly review, you know, now every one of those leaders has to present a slide on how they're using AI to run their part of the company. And then it all ladders up, it all adds up.
Well, and in doing that, you're making it mainstream, you're making it expected. And so people realize, okay, I've got to stop and think about this. And then you will spend some time. Another idea that I've heard recently that I thought was a good one was on all future job postings, having to indicate what level of AI proficiency is required. So not if, but at what level. Is
I've
it low,
well,
medium,
absolutely,
or high? And I thought, well, that says something, right? It's going to be required. Here's the level of it that I'm expecting.
Well, it used to be that people had to say what level of Excel proficiency that they had in job pros or Microsoft Office proficiency. That was pretty normal. So I think, you know, I think it's normal to see that as a requirement for every role.
So one last question for you. Now, when you look ahead, what do you think is coming next when it comes to AI and the next evolution?
Some of the things that I think are extremely transformative that are coming is not necessarily purely in technology for business, but is broadly speaking, the dawn of the era of the driverless car is very profound, because if you no longer need to have your own car because you can simply signal a car to take you somewhere else, that will fundamentally change so many things about the way industries that we today think, you know, are, you know, the bedrocks of our economy will start shifting. And, you know, it has the ability to create this very profound change on how people and goods move around. I think we're still in experimentation, and we have, let's call it, a countable number of years before it becomes reality in places like San Francisco. I think someone on our board member mentioned that Waymo has the same market share as Lyft in San Francisco, right? Which is, you know, a data point of one, but it's still an indicator of where things are going. So I do think it has, you know, of many of the changes that are coming, things like the true arrival of the driverless vehicle, where you no longer need to own your own car because it's so easy to just have one show up, will be very transformative for the economy.
Well, someone pointed out to me that when that comes to fruition, think about what that does to parking lots.
Right.
Something so basic, but all of a sudden you don't need all of those parking lots for all those cars sitting still, because the cars can be in motion way more of the time.
I mean, there's so many things. It changes so many things. It's a great example. Think about how much space we dedicate just simply to parking our cars in our own houses, in condos, in office towers, in malls, in shopping plazas. So much space is dedicated today.
Yeah, game changer
to,
for sure.
To driverless cars. And that's just one of the outcomes that is potential.
Hugh, thank you so much. Really appreciate having this conversation and hearing your thoughts on this topic. Clearly something we're very excited about here at Venna, both for our work and personally in terms of seeing where this will go. Now, whenever we have a guest on the show, we do have two rapid fire questions that we like to ask. So are you ready?
Can I ask?
You got them.
ChatGPT for the answer.
First one, what in your opinion is the hallmark of a mature finance organization in terms of how they operate?
I think it starts and ends with, you know, leveraging all of the best tools and technologies to provide business stakeholders the most up-to-date answers, and just really just being part, not just of the request response, but actually part of the ideation cycle. I always have my FP&A partner in my team meetings, in my senior team meetings, and they just, if they can't be there because there's too much toil, that's not the ideal state for the finance team. Now, the assumption is they can be at every one of our senior team meetings because things are working really well in the back office.
Well, and I think that's a great one, because I also see it as things are working well in the back office and they have something to offer. That's why you want them at the meeting. And that's the exciting part about adding real business value.
I've never met an FP&A person who doesn't want to be in that meeting and provide value.
100%. The next one, what is your go-to strategy to stay productive during the workday?
Taking walks. If I have a meeting of one person and, you know, I'm working remotely, I'll always do a walking one-on-one, because I think, you know, there's no point in us both sitting in front of a camera across from each other. If we have familiarity already, we can just as easily stay connected, enjoy some outdoor. And actually, you know, endorphins and all those good things happen. You become more creative through that.
That's a great tip. Thank you, Hugh. Really appreciate having you on today.
Thanks, Melissa.
Want to learn more about today's discussion? Check out the resources in our show notes. Don't miss out on future episodes. Subscribe to the CFO Show on your favorite podcast platform. For the CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.